People who don't eat meat or eggs are at high risk for choline deficiency, which means they'll run short on important compounds made from choline, including phosphatidylcholine. However it comes about, a low choline diet puts people at risk for fatty liver, liver cell death, and muscle damage. I was reasonably sure that such a diet was largely responsible for Marisol's symptoms. Young women have an extra capacity to make choline because, as we saw earlier, estrogen stimulates their PEMT. That makes them less dependent on dietary choline. Their PEMT can fill in the gap. This makes sense when you think that young women are the ones who get pregnant and breastfeed. They need a whole lot of choline to bear and nurture children, so nature has arranged backup. But even young women suffer from a low choline diet if they were born with a certain type of dirty PEMT, the type that doesn't respond to estrogen. And that particular SNP, it turns out, is quite common, and a significant health hazard. Some studies have shown that the less choline a woman consumes, the higher her risk of breast cancer. If you're not a vegetarian or vegan, make sure to get enough animal protein in your diet. Not too much. We don't want too much histidine, as we saw in Chapter 7, or too much tyrosine, as we saw in Chapter 6, but not too little. And if you're a committed vegetarian or vegan, try some alternative sources of choline. Asparagus, beets, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, flaxseed, green peas, lentils, mung beans, pinto beans, quinoa, shiitake mushrooms, spinach. In the Clean Genes Protocol, I'll also suggest ways to supplement with choline and or phosphatidylcholine, especially if you're a vegan or vegetarian. But, as always, I want you to start with diet and lifestyle solutions first. Who is most at risk for choline deficiency? Pregnant and breastfeeding women. As this chapter stresses, choline is needed to make phosphatidylcholine, which is used to make cell membranes. Since women who are pregnant or breastfeeding are making a lot of new cells, they need a lot of choline. Children. As children grow, they create lots of new cells every day, so they need lots of phosphatidylcholine too. Without enough choline in their diet, they could be at risk of a phosphatidylcholine deficiency. Vegans and vegetarians. It's hard to get enough choline from vegetable sources, although vegetarians who eat eggs have some advantage. See enhancement for a list of vegetable sources of choline. People fasting inappropriately. If you choose to go for more than 48 hours without food, consider supplementing with choline and/or phosphatidylcholine. It isn't a healthy choice, however. I'd rather you gave your body the nourishment it needs. People on a low-protein diet. Without consuming substantial protein, it's hard to get enough choline. A high-protein diet isn't the solution, though. We're always looking for the right balance. Postmenopausal women. High levels of estrogen trigger a clean PEMT to make phosphatidylcholine. But after menopause, estrogen levels drop. Even if you were born with a clean PEMT, menopause could make it dirty, unless you get enough choline in your diet. Of course, if you were born with a certain type of dirty PEMT, you won't have this estrogen advantage even before menopause. Men. Without high levels of estrogen to trigger the backup action of their PEMT, men must be sure to eat a high choline diet. People who are low in folate, or with dirty genes in the folate pathway, MTHFR or MTHFD1. The amounts of folate and choline in your body are related. Too little folate means that your body uses way more choline, and you could end up deficient. People with a dirty PEMT. If your PEMT is dirty, it doesn't respond to estrogen, so you need more choline in your diet. PEMT, methylfolate, and the methylation cycle. You need a lot of choline to make phosphatidylcholine and keep your cell membranes in good shape. But here's another factor. The more methylfolate you have available, the less choline you need, and vice versa. Why? Because both methylfolate and choline support the methylation cycle. So if you have a lot of methylfolate available, the methylation cycle doesn't need to draw on your choline supply. But if you're short on methylfolate, as you might be if you have a dirty MTHFR or MTHFD1, another gene in the folate pathway, your methylation cycle will use the choline pathway. And now you're potentially short on choline, risking a dirty PEMT as well as several other problems. Your best protection? Make sure you have all the methylfolate you need and all the choline you need. But monitoring those biochemicals is no guarantee of gene health. Even if you have enough methylfolate, your methylation cycle might be disrupted at another point, and then your PEMT will get dirty. Why? Because your PEMT needs SAMe, which we met in Chapter 5. And in order to have enough SAMe, you need a highly functional methylation cycle. About 70% of your SAMe is used by your PEMT enzyme to support the production of cell membranes, leaving only 30% for the other 200 processes that depend on methylation. That's why extra demands on the methylation cycle, stress, excess histamine, insufficient B12, from being a vegan, vegetarian, chronic illness, are so hard for your body to handle. The amount of SAMe needed is already great, and now you're using up even more. Likewise, if your methylation cycle isn't working properly in the first place, your supply of SAMe is low. Then your PEMT gets dirty, your cell membranes suffer, and your entire body feels the impact. Once again, the methylation cycle turns out to be of prime importance. Check out the enhancement for a list of what makes PEMT dirty. PEMT and the digestive role. The gallbladder, bile flow, and liver are all impacted by PEMT. Let's take a look. PEMT, gallstones, and SIBO. Besides cell membrane health, PEMT-triggered phosphatidylcholine is also vital for bile flow. Your gallbladder makes bile to aid in digestion, and with its antimicrobial properties, to protect you from small intestine bacterial overgrowth, or SIBO. If your phosphatidylcholine levels are too low, your bile flows sluggishly. Your gallbladder then begins to malfunction, potentially leading to gallstones, fat malabsorption, nutrient deficiency, SIBO, and chemical sensitivity. Gallstones are especially prevalent in pregnant women because of the high demands for phosphatidylcholine. PEMT and fatty liver. There are many different causes for fatty liver, which happens to be the fastest growing condition in the world. Researchers are finding that fatty liver is on the rise for a number of reasons, such as high fructose corn syrup, metabolic syndrome, obesity, and medications. Scientists have recently discovered that a dirty PEMT is one such cause. It promotes fatty liver. Marisol, whom we met at the beginning of this chapter, didn't have fatty liver yet, but symptoms showed that she was well on her way. So are many young women born with a dirty PEMT and not getting enough choline. How does a dirty PEMT contribute to fatty liver? There are two ways, both tied to PEMT's role in producing phosphatidylcholine. First, if your PEMT is dirty and doesn't trigger enough phosphatidylcholine production, you'll have triglyceride trouble. You need phosphatidylcholine to move your triglycerides out of your liver, which is done via very low-density lipids, VLDLs, secreted by the liver. If you're deficient in choline, and thus in phosphatidylcholine, your liver doesn't make enough VLDLs, and so your triglycerides build up. Pretty soon, you've got way too much fat remaining in your liver, instead of moving out into your bloodstream, where it will be eventually transported and used as fuel by your mitochondria. Second, phosphatidylcholine is needed to make cell membranes. As phosphatidylcholine levels drop, your mitochondria becomes less able to burn fuel. When you can't burn fat as fuel, you store it in your cells, where it causes oxidative stress. This stress further damages your mitochondria, which then burn even less fuel. Now you've got a vicious cycle that can't repair itself until your cell membranes are healthy. And meanwhile, your body is storing fuel as fat. PEMT, pregnancy, and breastfeeding. Sadly, most pregnant and breastfeeding women are deficient in choline. And shockingly, most infant formulas provide little to no choline. Please, if you're planning to get pregnant, see a reliable physician or nutritionist who can make sure you're getting enough choline in your diet. Research shows that women with a diet low in choline have 2.4 times greater risk of having babies with neural tube defects, such as spina bifida. The highest blood choline levels were associated with lowest risk. I recommend that women get 900 milligrams of choline a day while pregnant and breastfeeding. After the baby is born, breastfeeding demands even more of your choline levels, because this nutrient is secreted into breast milk at high concentrations to support the development of your infant's brain, liver, and cell membranes. Put another way, the developing baby needs that extra choline for three primary reasons: to promote cognition, to support methylation, to make cell membranes. Researchers have found that mothers who consumed more choline during pregnancy have babies with improved memory and learning abilities, while mothers with a low choline diet during pregnancy tend to have children with decreased memory and more learning disabilities. A number of studies have found that most pregnant women in the United States are choline deficient. So please, work with a naturopathic physician or integrative functional medicine doctor to make sure that you and your baby are getting all the choline and methylfolate you need. Making the most of PEMT. Marisol was concerned to realize the full extent of her health problems, but relieved to learn that she could turn her situation around. I urged her to start with diet. Since she was still reluctant to rely too much on meat, I suggested that she start making egg salads, which are a mainstay of my own diet. I like egg salads made with soy-free mayonnaise, pickle relish, salt, pepper, and chopped romaine, perhaps served on gluten-free toast. I also recommend deviled eggs, which I personally prefer to plain old scrambled or fried eggs. Here are some more suggestions for supporting a dirty PEMT that you can begin immediately, even before you start the Clean Genes Protocol. Make sure to eat some high choline foods every day. It doesn't matter whether you choose meat or vegetable sources, just make sure you're getting enough choline. I was surprised when I evaluated my own diet and found that I wasn't getting enough choline. My liver reminded me when I began feeling queasy. If you get enough choline in your diet, then having a born dirty PEMT gene is much less of an issue. Eat in moderation. This is good for everyone, but it's particularly important for you because those extra proteins, carbs, fats, and sugars burden an already stressed liver. The solution is simple. Stop eating when you feel about 80% full. Give it 15 minutes after you've cleared your plate, and the sense of satiety will come. Your liver will thank you. Control your stress. We all need stress relief, but it's especially important for you, because stress burns through choline like nobody's business. Keeping stress in bounds gives your dirty PEMT a chance to catch up. Eat leafy green vegetables. The lower you are in methylfolate, the more choline you have to use to support your methylation cycle. Make sure you absorb and digest your protein. This requires chewing thoroughly, eating while calm, not drinking more than 8 ounces of liquid during meals, not taking antacids, and not driving while eating. Reduce your intake of refined carbs. That means cutting out the chips and crackers. Go for proteins, healthy fats, and complex carbs, such as snap peas, baby carrots, and hummus. Wash your hands. with natural soaps, not antibacterials. Before eating or after spending time in highly public places, such as airplanes, hospitals, schools, offices, and sporting facilities. This will help you reduce infections from bacteria and viruses, which will ease the burden on your system and reduce your need for extra choline. Cook with avocado oil, sunflower oil, and/or ghee to reduce fatty acid oxidation. Don't cook with coconut oil or olive oil, as they have low smoke points. Also, be sure to turn on your stove fan while you cook. Love your liver. Because 85% of all methylation reactions occur in the liver, easing the strain on that organ will protect your phosphatidylcholine levels and your liver as well. Limit your alcohol intake and cut out preservatives and all unnecessary medications with your doctor's permission. If your gallbladder is sluggish, consider working with a professional who specializes in visceral manipulation. These practitioners can gently work to manually drain your gallbladder. I personally had this done, and it worked beautifully. The manipulation is fast and effective and allows immediate relief while you change your diet and lifestyle. How the Clean Genes Protocol supports your PEMT. Diet. We'll make sure you get enough choline and methylfolate in your diet, while removing the foods and beverages most likely to stress your liver, high-fat foods, with preservatives, and alcohol. Chemicals. By helping you to heal your leaky gut and strengthen your digestion, we'll protect you from pathogenic bacteria and infections that stress your system, eat up choline, and burden your methylation cycle. Stress. Both physical and emotional stress burn through choline. By focusing on stress reduction and stress relief, we'll help you conserve your choline and support your PEMT. Part 3. Your Clean Genes Protocol. 12. Soak and scrub. Your first 2 weeks. When you get home from the gym or you're just finished with a tough game of soccer, your clothes are sweaty and stinky, and so are you. What's the first thing you do? You take off all your clothes and jump in the shower, soap up to wash off the sweat, and then dry yourself off. Only then do you put on a fresh set of clothes. You don't see it, but your genes are dirty. We humans tend to fix what we see and ignore what we don't. But your headaches, rashes, weight gain, and insomnia are all results of one or more dirty genes. Popping a pill or a supplement doesn't fix anything. It just tells your genes to shut up. The problem is, they don't listen. They have set instructions, and that's all they know. They depend on you to understand how they work, so that together you can achieve optimal genetic efficiency. Now, you and I have journeyed this far together. You've heard me say over and over again that we have to address the foundation of the dirty genes problem. We've arrived at that point now. Here, in part 3 of this book, you'll discover what your genes need to function at their best. And for the next 2 weeks, that's exactly what you're going to give them. This program is designed to give your genes all the support they require. So before you do anything, I want you to stop and ask yourself, is this food, supplement, or activity going to support my genes or make them work harder? Remember, if your genes have to work harder, then you'll likely get symptoms you don't want. Think of it this way. When you're working, you get tired. When you go on vacation, you get recharged and are ready to tackle any problem you face when you return to work. For the next 2 weeks, you're going to give your genes a vacation. No one can work 24 hours a day every single week of the year without consequences, not even your genes. Give them a break. Once you understand the consequences of your actions, you'll make better decisions. Your genes will thank you for it, and you'll start to feel stronger, leaner, and more energized. Most important, you'll feel empowered knowing this amazing information. You'll finally have many answers to nagging issues you've wrestled with your entire life. Soak and scrub. Week 1. You might already be following some of the recommendations I provided earlier to clean up your jeans. If so, and you're having success, fantastic. Keep on implementing those changes. Simply add the new recommendations that follow to further enhance cleaning up your jeans. If you're trying some of those earlier recommendations and not having success, stop them and follow what you find outlined below for the soak and scrub. If you haven't tried them at all, no worries. Now is the time to do so. In the pages that follow, the recommendations are grouped according to the diet and lifestyle elements covered by soak and scrub. Food, supplements, detoxification, sleep, stress relief. Let's turn to the biggie, food, and get you started. Food. As Hippocrates wisely said, let food be thy medicine. But here's the thing. Just as each of us might need different types of medicine, we each need different types of food. We all know that while a certain medicine might help one person, it hinders another by generating significant side effects. The exact same thing is true of food. While fermented foods might be great for me, replenishing my microbiome and healing my leaky gut, you might have a dirty DAO that can't handle the extra bacteria. Maybe you can tolerate small amounts of gluten, while I can't. My son Matthew gets a runny nose, irritability, and earaches from cow's milk dairy, while Theo responds to the same thing with frequent eye blinking and constant clearing of his throat. Tasman, meanwhile, can eat cow's milk dairy with no symptoms. We are all different, and our reactions to food reflect that. We are also each changing, all the time. Maybe a food that worked for you last year gives you massive symptoms this year, or perhaps it's the other way around. Different genes become dirty or get clean, and since all your genes are always talking to one another, your whole biochemistry is constantly changing in response. That's why tuning in to how you feel is the cornerstone of your life on the Clean Genes Protocol. The goal of this book is to teach you how to live as optimally as possible so that you can reach and maintain your genetic potential. You can do that best by learning how to tune into yourself so that you always know what to eat and when. Tune into your body and emotions. Let's face it. Some days you feel like eating out, and other days you feel like just a salad is enough. That's life. Over the years, I've learned to tune in to how I'm feeling mentally, physically, and emotionally. That's how I figure out what I'm going to eat. If you're like most people, when you're stressed out, you go for carbohydrates and suck down calorie-dense foods to give yourself a feel-good dopamine rush. The issue? It doesn't last. So you do it again and again, only to gain weight and feel irritated with yourself about the choices you made. But you can't help it. It gives you a lift. I get it. That's why the first step to tuning in is recognizing the difference between cravings and hunger. Easier said than done, of course. It's especially hard to understand the difference between cravings and hunger when you're in the craving state. A craving is a feeling that you want to eat something specific, while hunger is that gurgling, empty feeling in your gut that you need to eat. We all have dirty genes that give us cravings. The dirtier our genes, the more cravings we have. That's one piece of terrific news. Remaining on the Clean Genes Protocol will greatly reduce your cravings. At the beginning, though, your cravings will be screaming at you, "Give in! Fail! This is too hard!" Don't listen to them. I've always learned ways to shut them up, and I'll share those with you. For now, though, simply try to switch your mindset from craving food to actually being hungry. Simply ask yourself, do I need to eat, or do I want to eat? If you succeed in this, your genes will thank you for the rest of your life. But meanwhile, banish regrets. We're all human. We all have cravings. We all enjoy food that tastes exceptional and tickles our taste buds. We all deserve to experience amazing food and that sense of warmth that comes over us after a great meal. And so, yes, there will be days and nights when you go to town and overeat and likely consume foods you know aren't ideal for you. That's fine. I do it too. The next time you do this, enjoy it. Go for it. Don't beat yourself up over it the next day. No guilt trips. You made a decision. You enjoyed the meal. Now the next day is a new day. To paraphrase my colleague, Dr. Sachin Patel, your decision to be healthy starts with your next bite. How beautiful is that? Just go back to cleaning up your genes and supporting the ones that need some extra help. The cool thing is that now you know how to do that. Just promise me that the next time you overindulge or eat a food you know you shouldn't, you'll enjoy it. Feeling guilty or regretful will only make your genes more dirty. Think of it like this. You invited a load of great friends over, hired a band, had a bouncy house for the kids, and cooked for 20 people. People were laughing, dancing, and having an exceptional time. On their way out, each of your friends gave you a huge hug and said, "Wow, awesome party. Thank you." And you felt great too. The next morning you wake up, tired and heavy, and with bleary eyes, and your face is a huge mess. Stains on the carpet, dishes everywhere, dogs on the table eating scraps, the yard trashed from the kids. You smile, remembering the great evening. You turn on your favorite CD and start cleaning up the mess, one room at a time. No regrets. Plan your meals. Most of us just follow our cravings. Instead, I want you to tune in, listen to your body, and plan. Why? Food should be restorative and nurturing. Many of us don't think of food this way. We think instead, "Oh, what do I feel like? Something salty, sweet, fatty, chewy, crunchy?" Or, "Dang it, I have so much work to do, but I have to eat. I'm going to run out and grab something and eat it really quick." I want you to switch to a different mindset. Food is beautiful. Food is your fuel. It's not a nuisance to get out of the way. Think of it this way. I have a big day ahead. I'm doing a presentation at work, taking the kids out to play soccer, and then we're off to watch a movie. What do I need to eat in order to succeed today? Protein to help me think, some complex carbs to keep me going while I run around on the soccer field, and a light salad before I sit on my butt watching a movie. Making that kind of plan takes awareness of what you'll be doing and what your body will need to succeed. Tune into your body and make your food plans based on the following factors. Your activity level, including both mental and physical activity. More mental activity requires more protein for sustained acuity, while more physical activity requires protein, healthy fats, and carbs for sustained energy. Your emotions, happy, sad, mad, enthusiastic, bored. Happy and enthusiastic moods require less food, as does being bored. Extreme emotions, such as sadness and anger, might require more or less food, depending on the situation. However, being bored, sad, or mad typically drives cravings for food, not actual hunger. Your symptoms, or lack of symptoms. Do you have a headache, feel heavy, have brain fog, can't sleep, have no energy, feel stressed? Or do you feel great, clear-headed, energetic, sharp? Feeling great, clear, and sharp requires less food. You've got something good going, so don't mess it up with extra food. Headache, lack of energy, trouble sleeping, stress, and brain fog may be due to inappropriate food choices, and you're experiencing the consequences. On the other hand, if you haven't eaten for a long time, those symptoms may be signs that you need to eat or hydrate. Tune in so that you can make the right judgment call. Next time, you'll make the right decision. Your genes. Which ones need cleaning? Which need additional support? Food fuels your genes. It's your job to deliver what they need so that they can perform at their best, and you can too. Give them garbage, and that's what they'll deliver in return. Give them quality nutrition and time to utilize it, and they'll do their best for you so you can succeed. Track your meals. Knowing how a food is helping or hindering you is important. Tuning in definitely helps. Taking it a step further and tracking what you eat in a food journal is even better. This way, when symptoms occur, you can look back and see what you ate and deduce what might be contributing to those symptoms. Tracking also helps you see the big picture of your diet, the amount of protein, carbs, and fat you're eating, for example, and what times of day you typically eat more and less. When I started tracking what I ate, I discovered that I was eating way more carbohydrates than I'd thought, which was contributing to my sleepiness, brain fog, and weight gain. I also discovered reasons why I wasn't sleeping at night: eating too much, too late, and too much protein. I prefer to use an app like Chronometer, which is easy to use. There are also other programs, see the enhancement, that can help you. Eating to clean your genes. The basics. The easiest way to keep your genes clean is not to make them dirty. By eating organically, you reduce how much work your genes have to do. Organically grown foods also have more nutritional content compared to non-organically grown. Cost can be a limiting factor with organically grown foods. If this is the case in your household, buy organic for only the worst offenders, those fruits and vegetables that, when conventionally farmed, are highest in toxins. Check out the lists of dirty and clean foods, conventionally farmed foods most and least contaminated by industrial chemicals, maintained by the Environmental Working Group, www.ewg.org. Every year, the EWG determines the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15. Typically, these lists don't change much. Commonly, the following fruits and vegetables are those to avoid if not buying organic: strawberries, apples, nectarines, peaches, pears, celery, grapes, cherries, spinach, bell peppers, tomatoes, cherry tomatoes, cucumbers, hot peppers, and kale. If you aren't hungry, don't eat. Now, of course, there are some exceptions, such as if you know you're facing a long stretch of time when you won't be able to eat. But for the most part, this injunction generally applies. Eat until you're 80% full, then stop. Eat a maximum of 3 meals a day. Ideally, eliminate snacking if you can. If not quite yet, at least limit it. If you find yourself snacking, consider the following common reasons. You're experiencing a craving rather than true hunger. Don't give in to the craving. Be strong. Ask yourself, do I want to eat or do I need to eat? You've got a bad habit, reaching for food between meals, that you need to break. Break it. Your fuel-burning functions aren't working properly. You're eating, but you're not absorbing your nutrients. You're not eating health-promoting foods, which means your body never feels satisfied. On top of that, eating poorly creates inflammation and even malnutrition. Fast for 12 to 16 hours daily. This is easily accomplished if you stop eating at 7 p.m., and then wake up to breakfast at 7 a.m. If you finish dinner at 7 p.m. and don't eat again until 11 a.m., that's 16 hours. Personally, I feel the best most days when I stop eating at 7:30 p.m. and break my fast at 11 a.m. or noon. If I'm leaving out the door to a conference or have a presentation in the morning, I'll have breakfast earlier. At the first sign of a blood sugar drop, slower thinking, I make sure to eat. Chew, chew, chew. Take a bite of food. Put your utensil down. Chew completely. Enjoy the flavor. Savor it. Swallow. Repeat. I would say 99% of us don't chew thoroughly, allowing time to appreciate each bite. but this alone will greatly decrease how much food you eat and increase how good you feel. Limit drinking during meals. Have one glass of filtered water, goat's milk, almond milk, tea, or, every so often, wine, but never any more than one glass. Don't dilute your digestive enzymes. Doing so limits your ability to absorb what you're eating. Trust me on this. Don't drink cold beverages during meals. Room temperature or warmer is best. Cold temperatures require your body to warm it up, thereby depleting you of energy. By drinking water that is cool but not cold, you are conserving energy. Sorry, no, you won't lose weight by drinking cold water. Cold water may also cause stomach cramping and colic, especially if exercising. There's no mostly gluten-free. If you have even a bite or two of gluten, that potentially sets off the same biochemical reaction as eating a loaf of bread. Why? Because your immune system responds via antibodies, and the antibodies are triggered by even tiny amounts of food. So 99% gluten-free is the same as 0%. Either you're 100% gluten-free, or you aren't. If you have a fever, don't eat. Just hydrate with electrolytes. Of course, if you have a prolonged or high fever, you need a health professional to assist you. Drinking fruit juice is like drinking soda. It's pure sugar. Limit it. I avoid both juice and soda 100%. It took me years to adapt to this, but I accomplished it. I feel so much better without either. Drinking fruit juice quenches a craving. It also dirties your genes right up. Juicing at home is great, but be sure to juice vegetables and not fruit. Ideally, use a Blendec or Vitamix and blend whole vegetables and herbs to get all the nutrients and fiber. Organic produce is preferred, of course, so you don't load yourself up with herbicides and pesticides. That'd be one dirty smoothie. Make wise food choices. Getting your food choices dialed in is going to help you make great strides in cleaning up your dirty genes. The key is knowing what you can and cannot eat. I've made that much easier for you. In the next chapter, you'll find amazing recipes for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Before choosing your recipes, complete Laundry List 1 in Chapter 4, if you haven't already, to discover which of your genes are dirty. Armed with this insight, select the recipes that will help you clean those genes. Make yourself a shopping list and get started. For some additional guidelines for eating to clean your genes, please refer to the enhancement. Individualize your meals. Specifically, tailor each meal to how you scored on Laundry List 1. A full guide of what and when you should eat is provided in the next chapter. Cook or steam foods fresh. Avoid frozen foods and leftovers. Leftovers are especially problematic if you're struggling with a dirty DAO. Digest your food. 30% of your stomach acid is released in response to preparing to eat. Observing your food, smelling it, and looking forward to eating it. Take the time to do all three of these things. Food should be nourishing all of you, mind, body, spirit, and genes. A meal shouldn't be something that you rush through and get over with. To see what I mean, think lemon right now. Did you feel the flow of saliva in your mouth? That's a sign that your digestion is ready to rock. Anticipating and pre-savoring your food in this way will make it taste better, and you'll eat less, burn food way more efficiently, and support a healthy metabolism. Use your stove exhaust fan when cooking. I know it's noisy, but the oil smoke is toxic. The less you breathe in, the better. Cook with high smoke point oils only. Ghee, avocado oil, sunflower oil, and safflower oil are best for cooking or baking. Olive oil, coconut oil, flaxseed oil, and walnut oil are great for salads. Supplements. While it's our goal to get all our nutrients from food, that isn't always possible. nutrient density in food is lost for various reasons. For example, soils are often depleted. In addition, transportation, extremes in temperature, the cooking process, and time on the shelf all degrade nutrients. We're all exposed to chemicals and stressors each day that burn through our much-needed nutrients. For all these reasons, sometimes we need to supplement. Here are some basic principles regarding supplementation that most people don't follow, but that will make a huge difference in your health if you do. Choose the form of supplement that's best for you. When I talk about the form of a supplement, I'm referring not to the nutrient it contains, but the means by which that nutrient is delivered. The easiest form of supplement to absorb is liposomal, delivered via microscopic fat balls in liquid. The hardest is tablet. Here's the order, from easiest to hardest to absorb. Liposomal, liquid. Lozenge, powder. Chewable, capsule, tablet. When you want to regulate how big your dose should be, the order is the same. Liquids are easiest when you want to fine-tune a dose. Tablets are hardest. It's easy to take a quarter teaspoon of something, but it can be tough trying to hack a tablet into equal fourths. Here are some other things for you to consider when deciding which form of supplement to take. If you're sensitive to supplementation, start a liposomal form with just a single drop. If you tolerate supplements well, start with a quarter teaspoon. The nutrients in this liquid form are delivered right into your cells. Taking a lozenge is great as well, not only for absorption, but also for regulating the amount you're getting. If you place the lozenge in your mouth and tune in, you can often experience the action of that supplement quite quickly, sometimes within minutes. If you're feeling better, or if you don't feel anything, great. Let it continue dissolving. If you're feeling worse, though, take it out. You might not do well with this particular product, or you might want to cut the lozenge into quarters or halves to regulate your dose. Powders are also great, because you can easily adjust the dose. Taste is an issue here for some, but there are many great-tasting powders. The ones that don't taste so great can be mixed with an ounce of juice or a little bit of applesauce. Chewables can often be cut into halves or quarters if you need to adjust the dose. Capsules are handy in that they mask the taste and protect the nutrients from air and water. Most high-quality capsules dissolve quite well in the stomach or small intestine. Oftentimes, people want to open capsules and sprinkle the contents directly into their mouth or in food or water. This is fine, as long as you check with the manufacturer or your practitioner. Some capsules should not be opened in this way. For example, betaine HCL, as it is highly acidic and can burn. Tablets aren't generally useful unless they were designed as a sustained release form of a supplement, such as niacin. If you have low stomach acid or are taking antacids, tablets may not dissolve well in your gut. Then you just end up with expensive stool. A park ranger once told a professor of mine about how many vitamins he sees in the outhouse, tablets that made it through whole. X-rays also often show undissolved tablets in people's digestive systems. Tablets may be generally cheaper to make and buy, but in the end, they're expensive, because you're wasting time and money. Don't feel tied to suggested use. The suggested use directions you see on a supplement bottle are just that, suggested only. Follow your health professional's prescription, or your own sense of what works for you. I always believe in starting small, to see how a supplement affects you. If the suggested use is 4 capsules a day, start out with only 1 capsule a day. The amount of nutrients you're getting would then be 1/4 of what's shown on the supplement facts label. Take one supplement at a time. I understand the impulse to load up on lots of new supplements. I get excited too. When I first began working with patients, I knew which supplements could help them, and I often recommended several at a time to get started. When it worked, it was awesome. When it didn't, it was a nightmare, because we had no idea which supplement had caused the problem. I've learned the hard way to try just one supplement at a time. Take it for a few days and see how it's working for you. Only then, once you see either a benefit or no change, should you add in another supplement. I say no change because the supplement might not have had time to work yet, but at least it isn't causing you any harm. Know your body and know your supplement. Before you swallow any supplement, you need to understand what that supplement is designed to do. What is its purpose? To raise serotonin and slow your fast MAOA? To clear out dopamine and support a low COMT? When you've purchased a particular supplement and are ready to try your first dose, take a moment to notice how you're feeling. Be aware. Tune in. Then, notice how you're feeling. Some supplements act within minutes, such as NADH. Others may take 30 minutes, such as acetyl-L-carnitine, or 24 hours, such as ashwagandha, to act. Again, be aware and tune in. Did the supplement do what you thought it was going to do? Is your slow COMT working faster now? Did you slow down your fast MAOA? You're responsible for your own health, but more important, you know your body better than anyone else ever could. Only by listening to what your body tells you can you decide which supplements you need and when you don't need them anymore. Follow the pulse method. The pulse method is my approach to figuring out how much of a supplement you need and at what point you should increase the dose, decrease it, or cut the supplement out altogether. It is vital for you to understand and use this method. Otherwise, you'll end up taking supplements long after you need them, and maybe even after they've begun to do you harm. If your body is deficient in something and you fill up on that deficiency with a supplement, chances are you won't need that supplement anymore. If you keep taking it, you might well end up with a surplus, pushing your system into a new extreme with new and unpleasant symptoms. So here is the pulse method, your guide to taking supplements. As the diagram found on the enhancement shows, the moment you feel great is the moment you should stop or reduce a supplemental nutrient. First, lower your dose, then keep lowering it, until you're down to little or no dose at all. If you feel bad again over time, you can increase the dose gradually. But if you start getting different symptoms, that might mean you're taking too much. For all the supplement recommendations below, you need to be using the pulse method. These supplements are powerful and highly effective. Use them only when you need them. Stop or lower the amount when you feel great. Add them back in when you need support again. Think of it this way. When you're on vacation, you likely can take a mini vacation from your supplements. I do. On the other hand, when you're stressed out, not sleeping well, or sick, you need more supplemental support. Adding in a few essential supplements makes up for these deficiencies. Below are three that I found very supportive. Multivitamin, multimineral, without folic acid. Your genes depend on specific nutrients in order to work properly. Many of us aren't getting enough of those nutrients for optimal genetic function. A good multivitamin, multimineral can go a long way towards solving that problem. Just be sure that you're getting one with no folic acid, which, as you know by now, can dirty your genes instead of clean them. Instead, choose a multivitamin with methylfolate and folinic acid, which are the best forms of supplemental folate available. Iron can be inflammatory, so ideally, find a multi without iron, unless you know that you're iron deficient. Take a multivitamin only if you feel tired, have brain fog, or otherwise sense that you need extra support. If you feel great, don't take it. Take 1/4 to half the suggested daily dose of your multivitamin with breakfast, if you feel you need it. Take another 1/4 to 1/2 of your multivitamin at lunch, again, only if you feel you need it. Never take a multivitamin within 5 hours of bedtime. The B vitamins can be quite stimulating and prevent you from experiencing deep sleep. Electrolytes. Many people are deficient in electrolytes, your body's electricity carriers, which are sodium, potassium, chlorine, calcium, magnesium, and phosphate. When you're low in electrolytes, your electrical energy is low. Common signs of electrolyte deficiency are muscle contraction, irregular heartbeat, mental and physical fatigue, brain fog, frequent urination, urinating within minutes of drinking water, feeling dizzy upon standing, and not sweating well. You should be taking an electrolyte supplement that contains, at a minimum, potassium, magnesium, chloride, sodium, and taurine, with no sugar, food coloring, or artificial anything. Taurine is needed as it helps carry electrolytes. Take the electrolytes before exercise or upon waking. If you don't have the symptoms listed above, and if you're not exercising or using the sauna, stop taking electrolytes. If you get constipated from electrolytes, you need to either drink more water or skip a day. Adaptogens. Herbal compounds that support your ability to handle stress are known as adaptogens. Common adaptogens are ashwagandha, rhodiola, Siberian ginseng, passion flower, and wild oats. Vitamin B5 and vitamin C are also supportive for stress. Adaptogens are best taken daily, since they give you the resources to be resilient under stress. You might want to skip them while on vacation, since your stress level should be lower then. Take with breakfast, or, if you're quite stressed, with both breakfast and lunch. In addition to taking the above supplements as needed, get yourself off as many medications as you can, but always with professional help. Stop taking medications that weren't prescribed by a healthcare professional. Some over-the-counter medications, such as antacids, need to be tapered down, so work with your healthcare provider to begin that process. Stopping certain medications cold turkey can create a rebound effect. That is, your symptoms come back super strong after you stop taking the med that was designed to suppress them. This isn't fun, so avoid it by tapering off your meds gently and only under a professional's care. For prescription supplements and medications, ask your provider if you can stop or taper off. Don't stop taking any prescription medication or supplement without your provider's permission and assistance. Your health could be at risk if you go cold turkey here. Detoxification. Avoid plastic for use with food. This applies to all containers that you use for cooking, storing, eating, and drinking. Rely on stainless steel, glass, or clay. Again, this applies to all kitchen uses. Avoid nonstick pans or cookware. The two-part trick is to not cook on high heat and to remove the pan from the heat for a few minutes before flipping or plating the food. It will slide right out. Avoid air fresheners and scented products. Product smells are pervasive these days in soaps, dryer sheets, toilet paper, paper towels, and much more. Since when did clean smell clean? Marketing has convinced many that if something is clean, it has to have a smell. No. If something is clean, it shouldn't have any smell. If it smells, it's making your jeans dirty. Avoid pesticides, insecticides, and herbicides. These are everywhere. Foods, schools, parks, workplaces. Start by making a change in your own backyard. The cheap combination of vinegar and water is a great weed killer, as is a propane torch. Healthy soils grow healthy plants and don't require chemicals. Investigate your environment. Look for possible sources of mold or other toxins, damp areas, actual mildew or mold patches, or water spots on floors, walls, or ceilings. Make a plan for cleanup and/or removal. Also check www.scorecard.org for the most common chemicals in your local environment. Then protect yourself from them. Sweat. Do this however you can. Exercise. Fast walks with lots of warm clothes, and Epsom salt baths are all good options. If you're taking electrolytes, consider hot yoga or a sauna at 120 degrees Fahrenheit or similar low heat for as long as you can comfortably tolerate, placing a towel on the bench to keep the wood clean. Be sure to shower and wash with soap afterward. While you're in the sauna, focus on your breathing and try using a massage roller on your muscles or dry brushing your skin. Never force yourself to spend time in a sauna. The moment you feel done, you are done. If you feel that way after 30 seconds, that's fine. Try again the next day. Rest for an hour or two afterward. Don't engage in exercise or sex during that time. Sleep. Your ideal bedtime is 10:30 p.m. If you're going to bed much later than that, start going to bed earlier in half-hour increments every other day. Improve your sleep quality. The following strategies, in combination, should make a significant difference. Stop eating 3 hours before bedtime, unless you have a fast MAOA. If you have a fast MAOA, and if you're not sleeping through the night, enjoying a light snack within an hour of bedtime may be helpful. Just a few bites of that evening's leftover dinner is sufficient. Drink no caffeine after 2 p.m. Ideally, none at all. Period. Stop all electronic activity at least 1 hour before sleep, and put your devices on airplane mode until morning. Install a blue light filter on computers, phones, and devices. Turn off all night lights. Crack open your window for fresh air. If you're cold, get a warmer blanket. Block bright illumination from street lights or neighbors. Ideally, ask your neighbors to turn those lights off. They're ruining your deep sleep. Ask someone if you snore or are a mouth breather at night. If the answer is yes, talk with your dentist. Snoring and mouth breathing make for a poor night's sleep, and, as we saw, a dirty NOS3. Don't take a multivitamin before bed, as it might keep you awake at night. Supplements such as tyrosine and some herbal stimulants can also keep you awake. Track your sleep with the Sleep Cycle app or the Oura Ring. Tracking your sleep helps you spot trends. I've spotted many trends in my own sleep through tracking and have altered my habits to obtain more deep sleep and REM. I've improved from averaging 6 minutes, yes, only 6 minutes of deep sleep and an hour of REM per night to now averaging 45 minutes of deep sleep and 3 hours of REM. Good news. I've shared all my tricks with you here in this book. Stress relief. Get outside. Go for a walk, play a sport, meet a friend, or just admire the beauty around you. In the summer, spend 15 minutes a day out in the sun with exposed skin and no sunscreen. After that, lather up with a healthy sunscreen. See enhancement for information on healthy sunscreen. Do a simple, comfortable stretching routine for 5 minutes each day. The yoga sequence, Sun Salutation, is great, especially first thing in the morning. Breathe deeply. Focus on your breath. Breathe only through your nose at a slow and steady rate. Be aware if you're holding your breath, snoring, yawning, or mouth breathing, and deliberately change your breathing. You should feel the air coming in slowly through your nose and then slowly going out. When people are stressed, a common response is to breathe faster and more shallowly from the chest up, rather than slowly and deeply from the belly. Work to reverse that pattern so that you continue to breathe deeply and slowly even when stressed. It's terrific stress relief and will also enable you to focus better and think more clearly. Here's a simple 5-minute exercise you can do when you're feeling stressed or anxious, have cold hands and feet, can't unwind, and or have a dry mouth. While sitting in an upright position or lying down flat on your back, position one hand on your chest and one on your belly so you can feel how your hands move. Your belly hand should move first, followed by your chest hand. Focus only on your breathing. Count each breath in, out, as one. Notice the slightly cold air coming into your nose and the slightly warm air leaving your nose. Then start slowing down your breaths deliberately. You want to feel slightly out of breath, as though you were walking up a hill. When you're ready, slow down your breathing.